Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. This time we're going to be heading back in time to ancient Egypt to explore the Exodus, a story that's captivated people for centuries.
A story full of Pharaoh's pyramids and a pivotal moment that shaped a nation, but there's a mystery at its core. When exactly did the Exodus happen?
Ooh, a mystery. I love a good mystery. So even the experts don't agree on the timeline.
That's right. Some scholars place it around 1446 BC, which we call the early Exodus theory, while others argue for a date closer to 1250 BC, the late Exodus. And, you know, those different dates have huge implications for how we understand both biblical history and archaeology.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's unpack this. Before we get into the theories, can you paint a picture of what ancient Egypt was like? I want to feel like I'm actually there.
Okay, so imagine a world of towering pyramids that were already ancient wonders by the time figures like Abraham and Sarah visited Egypt. Think massive temples like Karnak with sections built by generations of pharaohs, a testament to their civilization.
Wow, I'm picturing these structures now just immense. But we don't have much direct Egyptian evidence for the Exodus, right? Did those pharaohs' massive egos have anything to do with that?
Oh, they certainly played a role. Pharaohs believed their words held divine power. They saw themselves as practically gods.
So documenting their own defeat, not high on the to-do list.
Exactly. And there's even evidence that some pharaohs, like Ramses II, might have rewritten history to portray themselves more favorably. It makes our job as historical detectives a lot more challenging.
So if the Egyptians weren't keen on recording their losses, where do we even begin to figure out when this monumental event occurred?
Well, that's where we have to turn to other sources like the Bible itself, and we kind of have to become historical detectives. We piece together clues from different texts, archaeology, and other historical records. It's like a puzzle.
All right, lay it on us, detective. What are the main clues for each of these Exodus theories? Let's start with the early Exodus, folks.
Okay, so a key piece of evidence comes from 1 Kings 6.1 in the Bible. It states that Solomon's temple was built 480 years after the Exodus.
So working backwards, if we know when the temple was built, we can pinpoint the Exodus.
Exactly. Scholars generally agree that Solomon's temple was built around 966 BC. So add 480 years to that, and we land right around 1446 BC for the Exodus.
Okay, so the math adds up there. What else in the Bible supports that early date?
There are a couple other intriguing clues. In 1 Chronicles 6, there's a generational account that seems to support this time frame. It mentions 18 generations between a figure who lived around the Exodus and a descendant who lived during King David's reign.
Interesting. So multiple threads seem to point to that date. What about the late Exodus supporters? What's their strongest evidence?
One of their main arguments hinges on the mention of the city of Ramses in Exodus 1.11. It's named after Ramses II. Remember him, the pharaoh with all the statues?
Ah, yes, the egotistical builder.
That's the one. So the argument goes that if the Israelites were involved in building the city named after Ramses II, then the Exodus must have happened during his reign, which would put it in the 13th century BC.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But hold on. How do they explain the 480 years mentioned in 1 Kings if they're pushing for this later date?
They suggest that the 480 years might be symbolic, representing 12 generations, with each generation lasting approximately 40 years. It's a different way of interpreting that passage.
More of a figurative way of expressing time rather than a precise year count.
Precisely. They also point to the Merneptah Stele, a monument from around 1220 BC. In it, the pharaoh Merneptah, who ruled after Ramses II, brags about a victory over a people called Israel in Canaan.
So if Israel was already in Canaan by 1220 BC, it would suggest a later exodus and conquest.
Exactly. And some archaeological evidence seems to back this up. There's an increase in settlements in the hill country of Canaan around 1200 BC, potentially aligning with the Israelites' arrival. And some archaeologists point to a major destruction level in Canaan around this time, which they say could be the Israelite conquest.
Okay, so we've got evidence on both sides. This is trickier than I thought. But I'm also wondering, is it possible that both theories have some weaknesses?
You're absolutely right to question that. Every theory has its strengths and weaknesses, and it's important to look at the evidence critically. For example, if the Israelites were building the city of Ramses under Ramses II, like the late Exodus theory suggests, then their period of oppression in Egypt would have had to start well before his reign.
Right, because Moses was already 80 years old at the time of the Exodus, and we have to factor in his whole life, including that time he spent in Midian.
Precisely. Plus, some recent archaeological findings actually suggest that the city of Ramses might have been founded about 70 years before Ramses II came to power.
Oh, interesting. So the city might have existed under a different name during his reign.
That's a possibility. And don't forget the phrase, Land of Ramses, that pops up in Genesis 47.11 long before Ramses II was even born.
So maybe that name or term, Ramses, existed in Egypt even before the pharaoh we usually associated with. It seems like relying solely on that name to date the Exodus might be a bit shaky.
Exactly. And there's another detail in Exodus 2.23 that adds another wrinkle. It says that the pharaoh who ordered the killing of Israelite baby boys died during Moses' time in Midian. But if the Exodus happened under Ramses II, like the late Exodus theory proposes, then there wouldn't have been a change in pharaoh during that time.
You're right. Ramses II had a long reign. According to the late Exodus theory, the oppression and the Exodus would have all happened under his rule, so a new pharaoh wouldn't fit.
Exactly. It's these kinds of details that keep historians and archaeologists debating and searching for more evidence.
This is fascinating. It seems like we need to be really careful about jumping to conclusions, especially when it comes to archaeological evidence.
You're right. We can't just assume that every destruction layer we find in Canaan is the Israelites. Yeah. Plus, remember, the Bible itself only describes the destruction of a few cities during the conquest.
So that destruction layer around 1200 BC could be from other groups or events like the Philistines, for example.
Exactly. It's important to consider all the possibilities and weigh the evidence carefully. And when it comes to the early Exodus theory, one of the challenges is the lack of direct archaeological evidence for the Israelites in Egypt during that time frame.
But as you mentioned earlier, there are reasons why that kind of evidence might be hard to find. The Delta region, where they supposedly lived, isn't great for preserving ancient remains. And of course, those pharaohs weren't exactly keen on documenting anything that made them look bad.
Precisely. It's a complex puzzle, and we have to approach all the evidence, both biblical and archaeological, with a healthy dose of critical thinking.
Well, this has been an incredible start to our deep dive. It's clear that figuring out the exact date of the Exodus is more complicated than it seems.
What's fascinating is that even without a definitive date, the core of the Exodus story remains powerful.
You're absolutely right. Those themes of oppression, divine intervention, God's faithfulness, those resonate regardless of the year. And that's what I'm really excited to dive into next. We're going to explore the human drama that unfolds in the first few chapters of Exodus. Get ready for some truly captivating details.
It's a story that speaks to something deep within us, that longing for freedom and justice. And those themes are powerfully present right from the very beginning.
Okay, so we've established that pinpointing the exact year of the Exodus is a bit of a historical puzzle, but that doesn't diminish the power of the story itself.
Absolutely. Even without a precise date, the themes of the Exodus, you know, they continue to resonate across cultures and throughout history.
And that's what I'm so fascinated by. Dates and dynasties are interesting, but it's the human drama that really pulls me in.
It's a story that speaks to our deepest longings for freedom, for justice, for a world where the vulnerable are protected, and those themes are woven into the very fabric of the Exodus narrative.
So let's dive into that human element. What are some of the details from Exodus chapters 1 through 3 that are going to stay with our listener long after this deep dive?
One of the details that always strikes me is the courage of the midwives, Shiphrah and Puah. Imagine being ordered by Pharaoh himself to kill all newborn Hebrew boys.
It's a horrifying thought. And yet these women chose to defy him. They risked their own lives to protect innocent life. That takes incredible courage.
It really does. And what's so fascinating is that we know their names while the Pharaoh remains unnamed. It's almost as if the story itself is elevating those who act justly, even in defiance of power.
It's such a powerful message, especially when we think about the parallels we see in our own world, people standing up against injustice, even when it's dangerous.
Exactly. And speaking of powerful women, we can't overlook Moses' mother. Faced with an impossible situation, she devises this incredibly daring plan to save her infant son from death. She places him in a basket, a teva in Hebrew, and sets him adrift on the Nile.
Wait a minute, teva. Isn't that the same word used for Noah's Ark, the vessel that saved humanity from the flood?
That's right. It's the same word, and I don't think it's a coincidence. Just as Noah's Ark was a means of preservation during a time of chaos and destruction, so too is the basket that carries baby Moses to safety. Both stories speak to God's power to deliver his people from seemingly insurmountable odds.
Wow, I never made that connection before. That sends chills down my spine. And then, of course, there's Pharaoh's daughter who finds baby Moses and ultimately raises him in the Egyptian court. Talk about a plot twist that completely changes the course of history.
It's incredible, isn't it? Moses, raised amidst the splendor and privilege of the Egyptian royal family, gains an insider's understanding of their culture, language, and even military strategy. Talk about God working in mysterious ways.
It's as if he was being prepared for the monumental task of leading his people out of bondage. It makes you wonder about the hidden hand of providence, how events that seem random might actually be part of a larger divine plan.
It's a question that has resonated with people of faith for centuries. And speaking of the divine, we can't forget the central character in the Exodus story, God himself.
Yes. This is where we move beyond just the political liberation and get into the deeper theological themes. It's a story about God revealing his power and faithfulness in a way that echoes throughout history.
And that revelation begins with a seemingly simple encounter, the burning bush.
Ah, yes. That iconic image, I can still picture the illustrations from my childhood Sunday school books.
It's a story packed with symbolism. Moses, tending his flock in the wilderness, comes across a bush that's engulfed in flames, yet not consumed by them. It's a sight that immediately demands attention.
It's like God is making his presence known in a way that's impossible to ignore.
Exactly. And notice that it's not a majestic cedar or a mighty oak that's burning, but rather a humble bush, a sneh in Hebrew.
It's almost as if God is choosing to reveal himself in the ordinary, the unexpected.
Precisely. And from this unassuming bush, God speaks to Moses, revealing his divine name. Yahweh, often translated as I am, W-H-O-I-M.
Whoa, those words are so powerful. What does that name even mean? It feels so mysterious and all-encompassing.
It speaks to God's eternal nature, his self-existence. He's the uncaused cause, the ground of all being. He isn't defined by anything outside of himself. He simply is.
That's mind-blowing. It's hard to wrap your head around such a profound concept. And it's in this moment, standing before the burning bush, that Moses receives his calling to lead the Israelites out of Egypt.
Think about it. God chooses a shepherd, a man who's known both privilege and exile, to be his instrument of liberation.
It's a reminder that God often uses the most unlikely people to accomplish extraordinary things.
And through Moses, God demonstrates his power to break the chains of oppression, to set his people free, and to establish a covenant relationship that will endure throughout history. A covenant, by the way, is a binding agreement that involves promises and obligations from both sides. In this case, God promises to be the God of the Israelites, and they in turn promise to be his people.
It's a reminder that we're not just reading an ancient history book here. We're exploring a story that's foundational to the Jewish faith and has had a profound impact on Western civilization.
That's a great point. The Exodus story has inspired countless people throughout history, offering a message of hope and liberation that transcends time and culture.
It's incredible how a story from thousands of years ago can still feel so relevant today. Those themes of oppression, liberation, and divine power are universal.
And that's what makes the Exodus so enduring. It speaks to something fundamental about the human experience.
We all long for freedom, for justice. For a world where the vulnerable are protected and where those who abuse power are held accountable.
Exactly. And the Exodus offers a powerful model for how that change can happen. It reminds us that even in the face of seemingly insurmountable odds, hope is possible. That even when things seem bleakest, there is always a possibility for liberation and renewal.
That's a message we all need to hear sometimes, especially in the face of the challenges we see in the world today.
It also invites us to consider the role of faith and courage in challenging injustice. Remember the midwives who defied Pharaoh's orders. They chose to act according to their conscience, even though it put them at great risk.
Their story is incredibly inspiring. It shows that ordinary people can make a difference, even when facing powerful systems of oppression.
And it's not just about individual acts of bravery either. The Exodus story also highlights the importance of collective action and the power of a united people.
Right from the Israelites crying out to God for deliverance to their journey through the wilderness, which is that period of 40 years they spent wandering in the desert after leaving Egypt. It's a story about community solidarity and a shared purpose.
And that sense of shared purpose is what ultimately enables them to overcome adversity and build a new future.
Okay, so we've talked about the power of this story, the timeless themes, the incredible characters. But what does this all mean for us today? What can we take away from the Exodus that we can apply to our own lives and the challenges we face?
I think one of the most important takeaways is the reminder that we are not alone in our struggles. Just as God heard the cries of the Israelites and intervened on their behalf, he is present with us in our own times of need.
It's a message of hope and resilience. A call to action, and an invitation to trust in something bigger than ourselves, even when things feel overwhelming.
The Exodus also challenges us to consider where we see systems of oppression at work in our own world and how we might be called to participate in God's work of liberation and justice.
That's a powerful thought. It's easy to get caught up in the historical details and forget that this story is still unfolding, that we're all part of this ongoing struggle for a more just and compassionate world.
Absolutely. And it's not about having all the answers or being a superhero. It's about recognizing those places where we can make a difference, however small they may seem. It's about standing up for what's right, even when it's difficult, and trusting that we're part of something bigger than ourselves, something that's been unfolding for centuries and will continue to unfold long after we're gone.
This deep dive has been a real eye-opener. It's amazing how much depth and complexity there is to this story, and I feel like we've only just scratched the surface. What's really hit home for me is the way the Exodus story connects to these universal human experiences. Oppression, liberation, the longing for justice. These are things that resonate across cultures and throughout history.
You're absolutely right. And it's incredible how a story from thousands of years ago can still feel so relevant and urgent today. If we connect this to the bigger picture, the Exodus story continues to inspire movements for freedom and justice all over the world.
It's a story that transcends time and culture, speaking to our deepest hopes and aspirations for a more just and compassionate world.
Well said. And on that note, I think it's time to wrap up part two of our deep dive. We've covered a lot of ground today, but we've only just begun to explore the richness and complexity of this extraordinary story.
You know, it's really remarkable how much we can learn from a story that's thousands of years old. It makes you realize that some human experiences are truly timeless.
Absolutely. The Exodus story continues to speak to people today because it grapples with these universal longings for freedom, justice, and a world where everyone can flourish.
And what I find so inspiring is that it doesn't just present these longings as abstract ideals. It shows us how ordinary people can actually make a difference, even in the face of, you know, immense challenges.
You're so right. Think about those midwives who risked their lives to protect the Hebrew babies. They didn't have superpowers or political influence, but they had courage and compassion, and they chose to act.
Their story is such a powerful reminder that we don't have to wait for someone else to fix the world's problems. We can all be agents of change right here, right now, in our own little corner of the world.
Exactly. And the Exodus story also highlights the importance of community and collective action. The Israelites didn't achieve liberation on their own. They cried out to God for help, and they supported each other through some incredible hardship.
Yeah, that sense of solidarity is so important, especially when we're facing these, you know, big systemic issues like oppression and injustice. It's easy to feel overwhelmed and powerless on our own, but when we come together, we can create real momentum for change.
Absolutely. There's strength in numbers and there's power in a shared vision for a better future. The Exodus reminds us that we don't have to journey alone. We can draw strength from each other, from our shared history, and from the belief that a better world is possible.
This deep dive has really given me a new appreciation for the Exodus story. It's not just an ancient tale. It's a living narrative that continues to shape our understanding of ourselves, our relationship with God, and our responsibility to work for justice in the world.
It's a story that invites us to reflect on our own experiences of oppression and liberation, both personal and collective. Where do we see those themes playing out in our own lives? How are we being called to be agents of change and healing in the world around us?
Those are really good questions, ones worth pondering. It's been so insightful exploring the Exodus with you. I feel like I've gained a much deeper understanding of this pivotal event and its relevance for our world today.
I'm so glad to hear that. And remember, this is just the beginning of your own deep dive. I encourage you to keep exploring the source material, to ask questions, and to allow this ancient story to spark your own imagination and your own commitment to making the world a more just and compassionate place.
That's a perfect note to end on. To our listener, we hope this deep dive has inspired you to continue exploring the world of ancient Egypt and the timeless lessons of the Exodus. Who knows what other insights and connections you might uncover?
Happy exploring.
And thanks for joining us for another deep dive. We'll see you next time.